bags are packed, are you ready to go? This time tomorrow we'll be on the road, riding with you in the sunnier days. I wouldn't want it any other way.
Welcome to the Wife Savers Podcast, where multi-award-winning author and global marriage educator Ramona Zabriskie provides answers to your real wife questions. Our goal is to help you appreciate your womanhood, prioritize your personal development, and craft a powerful partnership with the man in your life. Hi, I'm Hannah Allen, and I'm proud to introduce my parents, Ramona and Dale Zabriskie. And yes, this is how they talk all the time. Let's listen.
Hello, this is Dale Zabriskie.
Hello, Dale Zabriskie.
Well, hello, Ramona Zabriskie. Thanks for asking.
I have always wanted to respond back to you when you say hi or hello at the beginning of the podcast. I want to say hi.
Well, I appreciate that because it's kind of like dead air after I do that. So it's, we're assuming maybe somebody somewhere says hi, Dale Zabriskie.
Just hear, thanks for doing that. Here are hundreds of voices saying hi, Dale.
That's great. Great to be with you sitting here. It's a Monday for us, and it's a good day for me.
Is it?
Yeah. I woke up feeling good.
Well, there's lots of color in your face. That's always a sign.
That's my sign, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And it's a rough week last week. Very difficult recuperating weekend.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You know?
But you kept your spirits up.
Yeah.
You so haven't always light, been able to keep your spirits
there's
up.
There's light at the end of the tunnel there, I guess, is the way I kind of felt after... After the weekend, I was just feeling like, oh, man, can I
so,
do this?
Wait a minute. So you're saying today you feel more hopeful?
Yeah, absolutely.
You just feel more optimistic about the week or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, I think, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that I think it's really interesting that you just told me that and a lot of other people.
File that away.
Because honestly, you don't usually talk about how you're feeling.
You
say, I'm feeling really happy today, or I'm feeling really down today, or I'm feeling really confused today, or I do that constantly,
yes,
right?
You do.
I'm just processing out loud all the time about my feelings, but you don't usually say, I'm feeling good today, I'm feeling hurt today, or whatever.
No, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, for me, physically in my life, I've had a bunch of orthopedic surgeries. I've had a lot of issues, joints and
spine. $6 million man.
Something like that, at least. And I guess part of it is that I don't want to talk about it. I want to go, oh, I hurt here. Oh, I'm feeling bad or something. It's just something that I think guys tend to process internally.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And deal
you
with.
You don't think so much about... verbalizing your inner world. Now, that's not true of all men.
No, but it's probably...
I know some really talkative guys.
That's right.
Tell you a little more than you want to know.
One of them was one of our children who would come home from kindergarten. When you asked, what happened at school today, you better really want to know because you'd get...
But you know, now that I think about it, what he talked about was rarely his... feelings.
No,
though.
It's what happened.
Yeah.
And Johnny did this.
Well, here's the deal. Generally speaking, and please underline circle and star and exclamation point generally, because it's not true of all men. But generally speaking, our guys don't process emotion. They're not as comfortable with emotion, especially high intensity negative emotion.
Mm-hmm. Hard to do.
As we are. They're not as comfortable with it. And so,
as women are. Yeah.
Because it represents a problem. It's a problem. Mm-hmm. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be done away with. It needs to be solved. And if they don't know how to do that, or can't even identify that they are feeling bad.
Yeah, that could be.
Then that's an issue. And we don't see it as a problem. Emotion just is.
Yeah,
it's just part of our life in our inner world, and we process it in a lot of ways, but verbally primarily, while men release emotion,
generally speaking,
they will release emotion.
Yeah, that's pent up.
Yes, and if it's high intensity negative emotion, how is it released?
Yeah, with high intensity and negatively.
Well, sometimes in ways that aren't pleasant for the family on the receiving end. Right? You've been in that position?
Oh, sure.
Where you're cranky and you take it out on us?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Mills Brothers songs, you always hurt the ones you love, you know, because they're closest and the repercussions aren't as
And kids are easy targets.
Yeah, right. That's a good
And your
best
wife can be
it.
An easy target too.
Yeah,
right. If you're feeling bad about life in general. Well, that's the exact situation our letter writer is in. And she says, Ramona, I just want to thank you for the amazing work that you do.
Oh, okay. Well, that's it. Thanks for playing, guys. Drive safely. We're done with our podcast.
There's a whole bunch more, but I just had to put that though. I didn't want to edit that out. Anyway, she's a good regular subscriber, listener to the podcast, reading my book and so forth. And then she tells us about the crazy years she's had with a real traumatic birth and an international move.
Oh, wow.
They have little children. And about 4 years ago, evidently, her husband started struggling in a lot of ways. She noticed that he seemed a little depressed at times, anxious, and was angry a lot with the kids. So she says, he struggles to cope with our kids as they overwhelm him. We struggle to have children, and having kids was something we always dreamed about. We're now so blessed to have the kids we have, and it has been so hard to watch him not cope with our life, especially with parenting. I'm overwhelmed by our kids too at times. I think that's normal. But my husband is quite often negative in the narrative he tells himself, and I find it exhausting to be constantly challenging the story he tells himself. He is quite often critical in the way he speaks to the kids. And as you can imagine, this just makes parenting more difficult, and it makes marriage hard for me. I am struggling to respect him, and I feel like this has just had a negative effect on our relationship. I want to respect him. I look for ways to respect him. I would love any advice you might have on how to begin to rebuild the way I see him.
Rebuild the way I see him.
Yes. Do you hear how significant that is?
Yeah.
She didn't ask, do you have, I'd love any advice on how I can fix him.
Yeah. How I can solve this problem.
Yeah.
Really.
How I can change him.
Change him.
She didn't say that. She said, how can I begin to rebuild the way I see him? I absolutely love that. She is obviously reading the book. She's obviously listening to the podcast.
Well, she's obviously giving him lots of space.
Well,
to
she's
deal
trying.
With it.
She's trying. Trying.
She makes a comment earlier about challenging I don't think the right word was stories, but what he tells himself.
Yes.
I think that that's.
She's constantly challenging the story he tells himself.
Trying to say that's not reality.
Right.
Right. But that's a hard thing to hear when you're in
the funk, he's not absorbing it, obviously. Yeah. He's camped in his way of seeing things, no question. And that, so she's thinking, well then how do I rebuild the way I see him? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell her right now, right up front, number one is that she has to understand him. First, she has to identify what's causing his despair. Yeah, what is keeping
him
from
real,
coping?
What's the heart at it? What's the heart of it?
Yes, yes. And then try very hard from that point to really understand him. Then we move on to empathy. Then we can move on to a solution.
Well, this is interesting. So you're saying to be empathetic, you have to understand, is what you're saying.
Oh,
right.
Absolutely. How can you be empathetic otherwise?
Well, I think maybe sometimes we try to feel for someone.
Okay.
Right. And feel bad or, you know, get down that trench with them sometimes, maybe to help. But understanding exactly where they're coming from is a step I think some people miss sometimes.
Oh, that's interesting. You're probably right.
You know, and to jump to the empathetic stage is not as effective or real or genuine, maybe.
Well,
without understanding.
Well, because then you're just jumping to the conclusion that they're not seeing things right.
Yeah, you could go
How
in a lot
you
of
really,
places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to make lots of space here to understand him, where he is, where he's coming from right now. And I think that is probably our best bet to help her today. I think we can come up with some other helps, suggestions.
Perspectives
and
stuff.
But really, really considering what's going on inside of him at this stage of family life, when it's really confusing, there's lots of pressures going on. We have new babies, we have little people, we have international moves, we have hordes of adjustments and new responsibilities all coming down on him. And so, let's understand him, and then we'll be able to get into his head and heart a little bit more and empathize. And I think that will go a long way in helping her to start to help him and to rebuild
how she
the
sees.
Way she sees him. She ends her letter with, "I love listening to you and Dale. You give me strength!" Exclamation mark. She needs strength right now.
Yeah,
and normally
definitely.
She would get it from him.
Yeah.
Right? He's supposed to be your strength. That's how she looks at him, I'm sure, because that's what partnership is all about.
And this has been, as she says, going on, I think, 4 years?
Right.
And so, you know, her bucket's empty.
Yeah.
Very empty.
Right. So how is she supposed to be a strength for him?
Right.
Though I think that is what he's asking for.
I think, even subconsciously.
His negativity is actually a cry for her strength. It's a evidence that he's depleted inside, that he's struggling. So, there's a lot of clues in there about what's going on. And she does mention depression. She mentions anxiety. She mentions anger. Before we go on, let's make something very clear that we're not going to address this as if it were a clinical depression.
Right.
Or a anger management issue, or any other kind of mental illness or personality disorder that brings on anxiety and so forth.
Or a mental health issue.
Yes, we're not going to treat it as a mental health issue. There could also be some, physical pain going on or anything like that. So this little podcast could be and should be very helpful to her and to many, many others, we hope, because this is such a common situation.
Not uncommon, right?
Exactly. But it is not a substitute for professional intervention and help. And so.
And you're very clear about that in all your writings and everything, that if there are some real serious things that are happening, whether it's mental health or abuse or whatever it is, get professional help.
Absolutely.
This is not the place to diagnose or or to fix.
Yeah. On the other hand, I have a lot of students who are going through professional helps, through counseling and doctors and whatever else. There's lots of resources, obviously, and using their Wife Savers Education membership as a complement and to what they're doing, and it's very, very effective. But yes, okay, we're not going to talk about those real clinical kind of issues today. Just want to make that clear. All right, so what do we have here? We have two people who've come together in love, but they're now experiencing the daily family life in very different ways and with very different feelings. And that really starts with coming from different approaches.
Yeah.
He's approaching family life very differently than she is.
And I think we've talked about that in the last podcast about how that can be very helpful and complementary.
It should be.
Right, it should be.
But
it
has to have understanding behind it.
You have to have a foundation of things are okay, and obviously things are not okay.
Yeah. So we've got this struggle going on. She uses the word struggle probably 5 times in her question. So she's seeing life as a real struggle right now, and isn't that ironic? Because they wanted to be parents.
For a long time, they talked about it.
And then now they have the children. The thing that should be pulling them together is actually pulling them apart. And I really want your perspective now, going forward for the rest of our discussion, about what is really happening with him, with the the whole fatherhood mantle. Mm-hmm.
The big pressure.
Right, right. So we'll get into that. But basically, she needs to see the relationship more clearly. That's what hopefully all her Wife Saver studies are going to help her do in this podcast. She needs to identify the fears that are causing his agitation and his despair. They are fear-based.
I think that is so spot on, because those fear in our life just drives so much of how we act.
Oh, and wreak such havoc.
Right.
And we don't know it.
No, oh, nor do
we're
we want to.
You use the word react. That's really important. Yeah. It's just kind of a gut response to things when fear is.
And for a guy, it's like, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of anything, right? Like, man, bring it on. I'll go to the haunted mansion with you. I can run through that haunted house. I'm not afraid.
You're reminding me of a review of Wife for Life, the book, on Amazon. Lots of them by men. And they all say things like, Zabriskie's perceptions of men are spot on. And and one of them I love the best said, I was in a place where I wanted to be honest, but that may have been the last thing I wanted to be true. It is true. And what was he referring to? Mm. The male fears.
He just opened that up.
He didn't want to admit that he was riddled with fear.
But he couldn't deny it.
But when he read the book, he realized he was the same as every other guy.
Yeah.
And that every other guy is literally riddled with fear every day of their life.
We just push through and cope with it and put it behind us, hopefully.
So I hope you don't mind, but we're going to expose that psychological underbelly that most of us don't talk about or are frankly very unaware of, including men themselves.
Yeah, acknowledge. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to identify the fears that are causing his despair and difficulty, and that they're both experiencing pain, obviously, and maybe even similar pain. They want this family thing to work, but they both feel like it's just not coming together. It's not working, and they're both in pain over that, but they're coming at it differently about how to solve it, and that's causing problems. She needs to understand better, as do all wives, that their brains and their bodies are so different biologically, literally because of gender, that they're experiencing this whole family life differently. So not only are they approaching it differently, they're experiencing it differently. Does that make
sense? Sure. I didn't think that's, like you say, that science shows that, and that's should be to the benefit.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Right.
But I think what you're saying here is let's acknowledge that on both sides. That is the first step of moving forward. Because I think, can't you be more like I am in dealing with the kids, right?
I've got this great
15-point plan here of how to deal with the kids.
Why can't we just be happy?
Yeah.
They're beautiful. They're young. We wanted them.
Yeah.
They were fun making.
Them. That's right. Yeah. Remember that?
Why is it so hard? Why are you having such a hard time coping? And I know that's her sadness now and her disappointment. Okay. Speaking of her sadness and disappointment, before we get into talking about his fears, let's talk about hers. We could spend hours on this.
Yeah, we need to have a podcast.
But just very
his and hers fears podcast.
Briefly, very briefly. Women, generally speaking, and every woman I've ever talked to agrees with me on these things, and that's a lot of women. The fear of losing him is a really predominant fear in women. The fear of being disappointed, which she's feeling right now, and that's why she's writing to us. The fear of interdependence. The fear of exposure, meaning you're afraid that if the real you comes out, he won't like it anything.
Yeah.
The history, whatever. And the fear of surrendering our sovereignty. That should be a whole podcast by itself.
Well, that's interesting because you have two of them. You have the interdependence and the sovereignty that are both fears.
Yeah, they seem paradoxical.
A juxtaposition.
We're not going to go into those in depth. I just want to point out that women have fears, and women never challenge me on that.
Well, yeah, you got
what
it right.
What they are surprised and shocked about is fears in their husbands. They never have considered that before. It's just, I think, maybe of all the things I teach, and the Wife Savers Education Membership, yes, this is a plug. I would really love everyone to join the Wife Savers Education Membership because it's so comprehensive. It's so comprehensive. Yeah. We just go through the whole gamut of your womanhood, your personal identity, and your husband's. I mean, the stuff we're just barely even touching on right now. And then all the skills that go into a relationship and into creating the relationship of your dreams, basically. It's amazing how much stuff we get into and cover in the Wife Savers Education Membership. Okay, so all of that. And what is the one thing that just kind of eye-popping, blows women's minds more often than anything else? The idea that he is just as scared as she is.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at the guy and the gal, and you've got we've talked a little bit about strength here, right? And she's looking, she's running out, and she's looking for him. He's supposed to be the big, strong dude, right?
Yeah, well, he thinks he is.
Well, right, right. The stereotypes or the things that are not, you say, fear of exposure.
Right.
But and so she's thinking, well, he needs to be the Hercules, the strong.
But not realize, in a way like anger and criticism.
No, right. Something that she can look up to and feel that she's protected and respect and everything. But the idea that he's scared, do you think that that's something that women don't want to mentally go to because he's not supposed to be, and I can't deal with the fact that he might be.
Right. Well, here's what I tell women when they first learn about the male fears. They get excited. They're like, oh, I think I understand now why he does this and that and the other. All right? So the more they get into it, the more comfortable they get with it. Okay. So it is an education. So they get to that point where they feel like, oh, I think I got a grip on this. Okay. I'm going to go talk to him about it.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
We're going to have this real heart to heart, and I'm going to help him, and we're going to face his fears together, and we're going to overcome his fears together. And I always try and grab him by the back of the neck and say, stop. Hold your horses there. Hold on, Tex. You know, that's what I'm going to say, because that conversation they're imagining is not going to turn out the way they thought it was. He may be even unaware of it.
Yeah. Right.
Even if he does buy into it and say, yes. Oh, thank you for revealing me.
I wondered why you felt that way. Now I know.
And he's opening up. Let's say he does open up and he starts crying.
Now what do you do? Yeah, that's right.
Women don't really like that.
Yeah.
They don't really want to know. And so it takes a very mature wife. And I will tell you, after your Wife Savers education, formal education, you'll be there. You'll be a mature enough wife that you can get to that level of intimacy.
Yeah.
But early on, I tell my students, no. We've got a lot more to learn before we're going to go there. So that being said.
But the first, like you say, the first step is just acknowledging it and appreciating that it exists.
It exists. So that's what we're going to do right now. And I remember the day that happened for me when I had to appreciate that it existed and acknowledge it as a real thing. It was during some unemployment, and we had repeated
times of unemployment. Plenty of those.
But it was one of the worst times. And we had just spent every dime, every resource, and there was a knock at the door, and it was the electric company with a threat in an envelope, a formal notification that if you don't pay by this time tomorrow, this much money, and I think in my mind it was like $500. It was just like huge amount to us at the time, your electricity would be shut off, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to take care of it myself. I couldn't. I wanted to hide it. That would have been stupid. I wanted to protect you, but I carried it into your office immediately, and you're sitting behind your desk, probably looking for work.
Yeah.
And I set that envelope down in front of you, and you opened it, you read it, and do you remember what you did next?
I do remember what I did. I basically collapsed mentally, physically, emotionally. Because I felt like it was the last straw. It was the end. I had no hope. And now, you know, my life is being cut short, basically. If they turn the electricity off, where we lived in Florida, it was probably August.
Yes.
You know, you think of the bad things that are going to happen.
My family's going to melt.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
it was very, very traumatic.
It was super sad. You put your head down on your arms on the desk and you cried.
Yeah.
I mean, you sobbed. And I stood there with my mouth hanging open, and the universe turned on its head. I was so shocked that my big, burly husband was sobbing uncontrollably in front of me. I couldn't hardly fathom it. You're almost crying thinking about it right now.
Well, you know what I'm thinking about is something we have talked a little bit about, I think, in the past, of the scene in The King's Speech. When
yes.
Bertie knows that he's going to be king,
yeah,
he has the same reaction. And when I saw that,
what did he say?
I went back to that time that you
when you saw
expressed.
That scene in the movie, The King's Speech, when the king says,
"I'm not a king.
I'm not a king.
Yeah, I can't be a king.
I'm not a king." Ooh,
yeah, that's every man at some point. It really is.
Well,
I think that's probably what's happening a lot in our example here.
Yes. Yes.
But it's not that obvious. He's not putting his head down and sobbing.
I'm not a king. His great sense of inadequacy and frustration and lack of control, all of that is leaking out in his
behavior.
Yes.
Yeah.
In anger and frustration and why aren't you kids doing what I tell you to do? And somehow he's internalizing this idea that I'm a failure as a father, which is one of the
fears.
Fears.
Yeah.
One of the male fears. Number one, fear of failure.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm not a king.
Yeah.
I'm not a king. Yeah, absolutely. We think of guys being so, you know, we all know the male drives because they're in every Hollywood blockbuster out there. The drive to succeed, the drive towards independence and autonomy, you know, the drive toward being a hero, the need to work, the need to be brave, all of that. That's what we see represented all the time.
Yeah, and that's how we feel.
On the big screen.
I mean,
and in the books.
It's Jerry Seinfeld had the joke years ago where he said, you know, when you're even as a kid, being a superhero is really an option, right? It's not a fantasy.
Yes. You know,
it's a real option. And I think that as guys, you know, we watch those movies or the whatever it is, we're like, yeah, I can do that.
Do you remember that Mission Impossible a couple years ago where Tom is hanging off the side of an airplane that's actually flying in the air, and he's hanging on for dear life on the side of the airplane?
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. We're sitting in the movie theater. That's a little different than the King's Speech experience because we're sitting there, and you were looking at that scene, and you said, I can do that.
That's right. It's not so much I can do that as is I want to do that. That's cool. So there's a little bit of that, even as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Superhero is an option.
Interesting.
That carries over to adulthood.
Okay.
And I think the other thing, as you've talked about in our example here, if somebody, you know, like me and the electric bill, if it gets to that point, right? If things are just over and over and over, failure, and I don't have the autonomy, and I, you know, blah, 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 those fears are manifest over time. Pretty soon, if the kids start just being kids,
it's
can't
an irritant.
Deal with it. No. Things are, the universe is
well,
falling apart.
They're the
with
one
little
thing
things.
You can control.
That's right. I'm supposed to control them. They're supposed to be just a certain way. So it's easy to. That's kind of, I think, the first easiest way to
get a sense of
some sort of control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Wow. Well, all of that, the drive to win and be brave and stuff, it's just so obvious. It's ubiquitous. It's a stereotype. It's a male stereotype. But what's not so obvious, and this is why it's revolutionary to women, is how delicate those drives actually make men. Their own ambitions, their own need to be brave and to win and stuff, that makes it makes them actually very delicate.
That's because interesting. Yeah, why?
Okay, because if you're challenged by the world to prove yourself, and Mother Nature has given you this determination to perform and so forth, that yearning for success and for recognition is so deep-seated, so biologically and culturally ingrained, and your sense of self is completely tied up in demonstrations of strength, physical and mental, all of that, then you're always at risk. You're always trying to prove yourself. And if you're proving yourself, you're at risk because you could fail.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? So the more you are
hazardous. It's very hazardous to the ego.
So the more the drive or the need to succeed or overcome or whatever
actually makes you very susceptible.
Risk. There's greater risk. Right. Involved. Yeah, right. Absolutely. I agree.
Right. So fear of failure, number one. Mm-hmm. Second fear is the fear of relinquishing independence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got to be in charge and responsible for it. Absolutely.
All right. So it's a real concern deep down somehow that he is losing more and more of the guy he's
authority.
Worked so hard.
Yeah.
No,
not
well,
so much authority.
A sense of self that he's worked really, a sense of masculine confidence, let's put it that way, in himself.
Right.
That he's worked really, he had to separate from his mother, you know, and become, this is who I am no matter who or what's against me. Here's a quote that I love that I often use. From de Balzac.
Of Balzac.
De Balzac, the famous French writer.
Yeah.
He wrote to his bride, "Good heavens, I'm terrified to see how much my life is yours."
Yeah.
So what is going to consume a man with that kind of terror more than anything else? Family.
Children.
More children.
Yeah, right. I mean,
more wife, more responsibility. And that's what happened to me that day in your office when the world turned upside down and I said, here's my big guy crying. What in the heck is going on? There's six of us. He has six human lives on the line that he is totally responsible for the outcome.
Yeah,
that's how
true.
You were perceiving it. I realized that moment.
Absolutely.
And that you were failing. And losing your... I used to be brave. Yeah, I used to be confident.
Independence, my... all that stuff. Yeah, I'm exactly right.
Wow.
Yeah, yep.
I don't think we really stop to... I think single mothers who are completely responsible for their children get a sense of that.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of couples, maybe we don't, women appreciate fully that the heavy nature of that.
Well, I mean,
especially
roles.
Especially if he is the provider.
Yeah, right. So that's what I was going to say. The roles, however the roles are defined and worked through in a relationship, we tend to kind of get into our lane, if you will, right? And for you at that time, years ago, the finances and the provisions and everything, that wasn't your lane.
That's true.
Right.
I was taking
lane.
Care of the children, including a severely disabled daughter.
Right.
That was my full-time job.
And so you don't really think about it. You got enough to worry about. You got enough to think about.
Okay.
But then when it rears its ugly head and it comes out that we have a major issue, you know, for you, that was, like you say, a watershed moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But for, I think, in the day-to-day, it's easy to lose perspective of what's happening in those other lanes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In his lane.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely.
Stay in your lane there.
So the third fear is the fear of neglect. And I don't know how much that would be in play in this situation, but just for our information,
being
that
neglected.
Is one. Well, as much as they shun being overattached, a guy might be like, oh, I'm getting a little overattached, overwhelmed here by all these relationships. He's also scared to death of feeling alone.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So paradoxically, he needs and fears emotional connectedness, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And
he doesn't really, if he's feeling that, he doesn't even know how to really articulate it.
No, it comes, for a lot of guys, it's like, okay, I want to get connected and we're going to do it tonight. You know, it's kind of like structured a little bit, and when I want it and how I want it and such.
Okay.
And that kind of is
more of a physical thing for
maybe
some guys.
Presence
okay.
And, you know, not necessarily intimacy.
All right.
But the, you know, as you talk about, and you've really written well about the women are so focused on relationships that mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's easy. It's second nature. It's just who you are generally to connect, but guys are a little more, prescriptive about mm-hmm. when and how.
It's now.
Right.
Connecting now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Now connecting. That's right. Meet you on aisle 3.
Well, I remember whenever I started getting over involved with the children or other projects, that you would start behaving very strangely. You weren't near as generous about my involvement in other things as I would. I felt like I'm always supporting you. Why aren't you supporting me in this thing? You're acting like you're going to do another thing. Or it took me a long time to understand what was really going on in your heart. You're saying, I feel you drifting from
yeah,
me.
Right.
I need to connect. But you couldn't really say that to say, I'm feeling a little needy here. I need a little attention from you, honey. You couldn't really do that.
No. And then, but what happens is the thing that's drawing you away.
Which could be the children.
Which could be whatever, right. Becomes the enemy. See? And so the complaining or the...
Okay, wait. Put that in context of the kids. Okay, if she's being just all her focus and concentration is going on the children, mm-hmm. do the children become something of a...
They become an easy target, yeah.
Almost an enemy?
Mm.
If he's feeling lonely and neglected?
Could be, yeah. Yeah. I know that's what happened for me. I never felt that way about the kids, but there were times where there was something going on in your life that, to me, it was that thing that became
was drawing
the negative.
Drawing me away
right.
when you needed me, but couldn't really say that.
Yeah. Didn't know how, I guess.
Heavy stuff here. All right. The fourth fear is uselessness, and I that could be playing in here if he's feeling, you know, he says in 100 million ways every day to her, do you still need me? He needs to be needed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if she's super efficient, super capable,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and saying, no, you're not doing that right with the children, I'll do it, she's giving him another reason to resent the children.
So it's a real interesting balance that has to come into play, you know, in these roles.
She needs to let him be a part of the parenting, even if he doesn't do it exactly the way she would do it or whatever. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
But there's something else that could be playing in here. And then the last fear that we'll talk about is emotional overwhelm. And we mentioned it earlier that, generally speaking, our guys are uncomfortable with high intensity or any kind of negative emotion. And they really don't process it the same mm-hmm. way we do. So emotional demands are uncomfortable, wouldn't you say, for most guys?
Yeah.
So imagine a house full of kids with emotional demands.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't need to imagine. Living that dream, have lived that dream. And it's, you know, it's interesting now at our stage as grandparents, you know, we have our little abode, which is generally quiet and kind of structured, you know, we know and how things are going to play out most days.
Yes. No,
and then,
there's light at the end of the tunnel, ladies.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, so we used to sit around and go, hey, listen, do you hear that? What do you hear? Nothing, you know. And you enjoy that, right? But then the grandkids come over, 3 or 4 at a time. wow, what a difference.
Wow, it's just like hurricane.
Yeah, and it's like in 5 minutes, the house, the room is just totally turned upside down. And I remember saying to Seth, how did we deal with this? You know, you kind of
we had to be younger.
When you're divorced from it, you know, from a time perspective, you forget. But it's, you can see how that can be very overwhelming. And for a guy where things aren't right, things are not in a good place, whether the job's an issue or finances are an issue or whatever it is, the external things are not lined up. These types of things that disrupt that, disrupt the little universe, the chaos that can exist, has the impact to expose, you know, the inner monster
turmoil
that comes out. So triggers, I guess, is a word, right?
Right. And she's saying, our letter writer, like, I get overwhelmed too, but I think that's normal. She's just embracing the chaos. She understands that's how it is. Yes, I live in a hurricane, but that's part of motherhood. Don't you see that? Aren't you excited about it? Isn't it fun? And now you've just explained to us why it doesn't feel that way to him.
No. It's for me, you know, I had to learn that it is part of life. It's a stage, you know, it's going to pass.
I call it the toy box stage. The house is a toy
box. Exactly. You're going to step on a Lego or whatever. Yeah, we had a good friend who broke his ankle on a toy.
Spent kids skate.
5 weeks in rehab. It was pretty bad.
I'm paranoid.
That's right. So, but yeah, I think that, you know, coming to terms with that, like you say, is really important. But if things are out of whack, it's going to be, you know, it's just going to be a trigger for that.
Right. Red alert. Right. And when that red alert goes off in his heart, what does he do? He puts on the male masks to give himself time to process, time and space, to process the emotion. You know, he doesn't really even, maybe can't even identify the things you just said. You said it took you a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
To learn those things. So he puts on that male mask to cover up and still come across as the capable guy or the tough guy or whatever. The strong guy, at least. So maybe it's the let's fight mask. We've talked about this in another episode.
Right, confrontation.
Right. So he's like, boy, you're so edgy. You're so cranky.
I'm fine. What's your problem?
I only said... Yeah. That's what she's thinking. Right. I didn't say anything. And he's picking a fight right out of the bat. Let's fight mask. The leave me alone mask.
I have pulled that out more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
The what are you getting so hysterical about mask?
Not
when
that
she's
big
like,
of a deal.
Something, what did you just, you shouldn't talk to the kid that way or something. Be sure to listen to the last episode so you know how to handle those situations. There's another episode, and I think it is our most popular episode, maybe our second most popular episode, which is his criticism.
Oh, his criticism.
And that can apply to the children, criticizing the children too. Sure. So be sure to listen to that. But what are you getting so hysterical about? And then the I'm depressed mask. You know, just, I can't deal with life.
Yeah, and that may be at play here.
It sounds like
pretty big.
It sounds like they all are, actually, from what she said. So I hope it doesn't scare her or any of our other women listeners too much to know how scared he is, that he needs to be needed. He's afraid of uselessness. He loathes feeling neglected. He's afraid of her indifference or apathy or unavailability.
Yeah, that's right.
He must protect his independence because he's afraid of becoming too dependent on the family. He has to succeed. He can hardly bear the idea of failure. I'm not a king. And he's naturally on guard against emotional overwhelm.
Absolutely.
So that's just a little review of what we just talked about. Yeah.
And I'm the poster child for all of that, I feel like, at times.
Because you're a guy, honey.
Thank you.
But I hope that it helps her the way it's helped me and many other women to consider those things. Because there's so much pressure on him. so many expectations on our guys day in and day out. I always picture, and I used to actually use in one of my presentations, a picture, an image of a man hanging a rock climber without any.
Yeah, no ropes.
No ropes. Hanging on the side of a cliff by his fingernails. I said, see, that's how your man feels every day of his life. He's barely hanging on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's true. It's I just the other day, the other night, I went to sleep. Well, eventually fell asleep because of just so many things to worry about.
That you were worried.
Yeah,
about.
Big time.
Oh, I'm so sad about that. See, and you didn't tell me that.
That's
you didn't
right.
tell me then. You didn't tell me the next
morning.
No,
because you know it's you're going to sleep. You need to go to sleep. Don't worry about it.
You're trying to protect my peace
sure,
of mind.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I'm a guy. I can handle it. I got it. Take it from here. Don't worry. I got it.
Well, I think we need to end or wrap this up with something on some hopeful help.
That's right.
A hopeful help. The whole Wife Savers philosophy. And remember that big comprehensive course and program that I invite everyone to participate in is designed to help us and our guys identify these kind of things and then learn the remedies and the skill sets that are needed to build our relationship going forward. And that's what she's asking. How do
yeah,
we build how I see
yep.
him?
Right.
But I want to, so I wish I could give it all to her right now in a little pill. I can't, but I can give her one idea. So how about one could be very, very potent idea. And that's the idea of giving his masculine zest a boost.
Ooh, I like the sound of that right there. Let's boost that
I know
zest.
What everybody's thinking. I said zest.
Z-E-S-T. Let me spell it for you. I-T-F-O-R-Y-O-U. There.
What? What did you just spell?
I said, let me spell it for you.
Oh.
I-T-F-O-R-Y-O-U.
That went right over my
That's
head.
Supposed to.
I was thinking about zest.
Yeah, no, you weren't. You were thinking about that other thing.
That sounds like zest.
That's right.
That we're making a course about right now.
Ooh.
Yeah. Not right now,
no,
but we're in the process.
Say, not this moment. It's on the schedule.
So, no, when I talk about masculine zest, I am talking about how our guys have all these pressures, all these expectations, and they work so hard. Most men really have to work or they'll go to jail.
Yeah, or they don't want to, but they do.
That's a Tim Allen joke.
That's right. That's my
men
other
have
option.
To work or go to jail. Yeah, they have to work and they do work, but they need to balance it out. It needs to be really optimally balanced for optimal health, emotional and mental health with play. And when I say play, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the everyday kind of opportunities to break away.
Do something different.
Yeah. Well, right? Maybe it's shooting hoops.
Yeah. It might be sports-based.
It might be physical,
mm-hmm.
but it could also be mental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some guys like to escape into a book or whatever. So play, it's just a respite from that incessant pressure to perform. All right?
Yeah.
Play. They need play. And women, lots of wives don't make room for that. They don't understand it. You know, he gets home, he's totally depleted his testosterone, which literally has helped him focus and deal with whatever he's had to do. Let's just take that sort of stereotypical thing of dad coming home. And in this situation, that could very well be true if she's got a lot of little children. And he literally, his biologically, has depleted his testosterone levels. And he's got to replenish them before he can go back into family life in a very positive, productive way. Think of a rubber band that's gone limp.
It's got to be stretched.
Right? So giving him the opportunity to play will sort of rejuvenate mm-hmm. that testosterone, or what I like to call it, his masculine zest. His sense of confidence where he can be a little more generous, a little more patient, a little more engaged with the family if she'll give him an opportunity to stop at the gym or to go to the office and have some time alone. That was your phone,
that was
not
me.
Mine.
Sorry.
And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that, so, you know, I think in a lot of relationships, it's, okay, honey, I'm home. Mm. And now it's like, you got three kids draped off of you. It's like,
or she's got a list the minute he walks in the door.
Boom. Right, and away you go.
Right.
And I think what you're saying, though, is not to disrespect that or ignore that, but for...
She does need his help.
Right. But for the woman to appreciate that this element of play...
I call it play.
How you want to define it.
It just really is a reprieve.
Yeah, a reprieve is a good way to put it. Needs to be... accepted and encouraged
and
accommodated.
She because, can facilitate
right,
it.
Because he'll be much better at helping with the kids or taking care of that list or whatever
exactly,
it is.
Exactly. And it doesn't, I'm not saying it has to happen at 5 o'clock every night.
Right. It or every day.
Yeah, or maybe even every day.
Right.
Every man is different, but she's going to have to figure out the secret combination. I'd like to throw one other ingredient into that miracle combo, and that is adventure.
Yeah, so define this. How does she facilitate? How can she create this idea of play or adventure?
Okay, play I don't think is so hard to conjure up. But adventure is something that's sort of a daring exploit that's going to take a little more resources, a little more time, a little more investment, maybe a little more sacrifice on her part or his part or the family's part for him to do this thing. Maybe it's going camping for a few days. Maybe it's going, this is literally one that one of my students dealt with. Her husband wanted to go to Russia and live there for 2 weeks in an immersion language program. This was his idea of an adventure.
Or we have an acquaintance that did an Ironman triathlon.
Exactly.
And that's that doesn't just happen. There's a lot of preparation and time and effort.
Right.
And then it doesn't happen in your town.
Right. But from her point of view as an overwhelmed mommy, that can seem like, what? When do I get an adventure?
Yes, right.
What do you, and it seems self-centered. You know, it can seem like it's requiring too much money or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what happens is his male confidence, or maybe not just his male confidence, but his confidence in masculinity in general, comes back like that rubber band, just boing. And he is so much more engaging and everything I said before, patient, generous, intellectual. He wants to help her. He's even willing to think more abstractly in the spiritual, whatever.
Mm.
This is the kind of things that I hear back and back and back and back from my students who really take this to heart. The idea of play and adventure and how that really can help his masculine zest. I'll say one more thing along masculine zest, and that is the quest, the male quest. What is he doing? What is his great objective,
his life dream?
What is his work? That is a huge factor in his sense. So he could very well be taking out on the family right now that he's not happy in what he's doing. He's frustrated that this isn't fulfilling his need to get out there and make a real difference.
Yeah.
So that's a topic that is so huge. It takes up a lot of Wife Savers. But we do have a couple of podcasts along those lines. So go back, look for the episodes that have the word quest in them, or I think one is called Do You Believe in Him? Both of those are really going to help you with the quest line. But I want to challenge our letter writer to consider this idea. Most of all, the play and adventure, getting a little more balance into his life, an opportunity for him to get away and think and just get into his body, maybe not even thinking so much as just exerting. It will help.
Yeah.
I know it will help. So whether it's, you know, shooting hoops or climbing rocks or reeling in fish or racing engines or zapping zombies or reading fiction, you know, these things aren't slight, they're not silly, they're not stupid, and they're not scary. In fact, they'll go a long way to soothing his scaries.
Yeah, I think so. One thing, though, that I think sometimes guys that are in this funk that are happening try to lose themselves in something like gaming or something. That
we should do a podcast just about gaming.
Yeah, but I think what you're saying is for her to help look at something that is not something he's doing now, maybe, or encourage him to do.
Or something he's talked about wanting to do,
right,
but hasn't really given himself permission to do.
Yeah, or isn't something that, you know, gaming, like you say, we could talk forever about that, or something that a lot of guys can use to withdraw and to escape.
Well, remember, though, we're talking about two different things here. Play is in the everyday kind of stuff, the ordinary kind of things. And adventure
is bigger,
that once in a while exploit.
Yeah. But I think that even at the play level could be something that is just different, something he hasn't been doing for a while, or like you say, wants to do.
Thinking about,
as opposed to just go game more.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
I think that, I know for me, that would help. Yeah, you know, I got to change my perspective and get out and
get a fresh.
Something different. Yeah. Something different. Yeah.
Let's talk about that ourselves when we're done here. I am curious to know if you feel like you have enough play in your life and what we could do to do something different for you.
Got my list. I'll pull it out.
All right. All right. So here's my little poem. Here's my little poem for all our wives that want to help their husbands deal with their inner fears and also cope with family life a little better. Watch him if you can as he plays, right? Watch him if you can. Cheer him from the stands. Be his biggest fan. Try to understand. Let him be a man. Make sunshine in the land if you want him to expand and grow up.
Don't you just love Ramona? Well, maybe not as much as I do. But if you want more of Ramona, you've got two choices. You can go through me, or you can go to wifesavers.org, which is a lot easier. So go to wifesavers.org, get Ramona's free ebook, and sign up for her newsletter. Then you'll be the first to know when we release our new course on physical intimacy that'll be coming out this summer. Thanks for listening.
Home is with you wherever that may be.